You're listening to an iHeart podcast.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Of course, an Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and it's another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. Remember, you can email us. We are live here, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. I already played the mud-throwing, poop-throwing spat that happened today in the house. I don't even know if I'll play it again. It's a daggone embarrassing, but it is what it is. Let's move on. You know what? Let's step away from politics, deal with a couple things. Military matters, veteran suicide. Where's the worst place to fight? This guy says, Dear Oracle, regarding your hammock story, if you missed it the other night, I retold the story I've told before about my hammock exploding in the middle of the jungle in Thailand and whatever. Go download a podcast of the show if you missed it. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. Anyway, regarding your hammock story, as you have experience of desert warfare from fighting in Iraq, was it less hellish than jungle fighting? What environment do you consider most conducive to warfare? Jungle, desert, temperate plains, forests of Europe, of North America? Warfare is hellish on warriors wherever they fight, but what environment would be the least hellish? My cousin, who also listens to you, wonder what life is like for you up in the 6'8 stratosphere. His name is Michael. Okay, well, first of all, being as how I'm 6'8, let me just clue you in on just something. Everyone has different philosophies in life. I'm not saying mine's correct about everything or really anything. I mean, who knows, right? But I never wanted to be boring. I just don't want to be boring. Isn't that bad? I don't want to be boring. So let me tell everyone, when you see a really tall person, try the best you can not to ask them how the weather is up there. And if you can make that effort, maybe go one step further and don't ask them if you play basketball. Because it's not that you're going to offend me if you've ever said these things to me. It's just you really, really need to understand how painfully unoriginal those two questions are. About 90% of the people I get in an elevator with will ask me those two questions on our way up or down wherever we're going. Oh my gosh, how tall are you? Do you play basketball? It just comes out of people. So that part of being 6'8 is annoying. It's very, very annoying to have to purchase first class air travel seats. I've never traveled first class in my entire life. Our honeymoon, we got upgraded for free because they found out we were on our honeymoon. It was the greatest moment of my life. And now it's gotten to the point where my right knee, whatever. Now I basically have to buy them if it's a long flight, and it really irks me to spend that kind of money. So that sucks. Other than that, 6'8's being great. Now, the best environment to fight a war. Now, I would argue the desert. And I've been doing a bunch of reading lately on Rommel, that German general Rommel, in the fighting. He was fighting the Brits for a long time in northern Africa before we ever got there. Before Patton and whatnot got there, he was fighting the Brits. And the Nazis would push him back. And then the Brits would push them back. And then the Nazis would push him back. All this desert warfare training. And you would think the desert would be, you know, uniquely horrible. And don't get me wrong, it was most definitely horrible. It was hot and miserable and it sucked. But it is fairly open and you can move around. And it depends on what kind of army you have, obviously. But if you are a mobile army that wants to move and can move, the desert is amazing because you don't have canyons and gullies and all kinds of things like that. Trees, you just don't have that stuff. Chris said sand. Well, when I say desert, I should clarify, I'm not talking about sand dunes and things like that. You generally don't see a ton of fighting in that kind of... You're thinking Sahara from the movies. You're thinking the Sahara Desert from the movie. You generally don't see a lot of fighting there. And yes, that would be a pain. But believe me, that would suck too. The worst from... I shouldn't say the worst because I don't know. I've only fought in one. I only fought in the desert. I did training in other kinds. But have you ever... How much do you know about the fighting that took place around Port Moresby in New Guinea. You know where New Guinea is? It's over by Australia. It's a huge island over by Australia. So I'm not going to go into that. We're not doing a bunch of history, but you should know that it was a combination of the thickest, most horrific jungle you can imagine and everything that came with that, the jungle disease, the poisonous animals, honestly, hostile tribes that many still exist there to this day. A combination of jungle like that with mountains that are as big as the Rocky Mountains. The jungle, there are stories about Japanese, rampant stories about Japanese cannibalism during World War II, the environment was so horrific, the men were starving so badly, they started eating each other. Did you know over 200,000 Japanese troops died in New Guinea in World War II? 200,000! It is fighting most people don't even know about. There are stories about men who would have, you'd be humping up and down, up through the jungle, but it's straight up and down where you're on your hands and knees. You're on all fours trying to get to the top of this single jungle path. There are stories of men getting to the top and being so happy they finally made it, they would weep with joy. It sounds like a living hell. And speaking of the Japanese, you know how they were all over the place. They were in India, Java. They were obviously the Philippines. They were all over for the Japanese. And they wrote about it. A lot of them did. The worst place they had in their empire that they were trying to defend and take over by a mile was New Guinea. New Guinea, a combination of jungle warfare with mountain warfare. Oh my gosh. And this, what I'm about to say is going to make a lot of people, a lot of military types, probably angry. And you're welcome to argue with me about this because this is personal opinion stuff. But I have always found, at least in my own personal dealings and in my reading, I have found mountain fighters, mountain people to be the toughest. Genuinely, you would think it might be jungle fighters, mountain fighters. Like if you, please forgive me, my fellow Marines, but mountain division, any unit, there are different SEAL units that specialize in mountain warfare. There are different, depending on which group you're in, different special forces units, but the mountain warfare guys, they're always mocked by their veteran buddies because they got the worst assignment because you're just hiking, you're humping up and down cliffs, it's cold, it's whatever. They always get mocked for getting the worst assignment, but everyone kind of knows in the back of their head, those are the toughest dudes. They had, I'm so mad at myself, I can't think of it, I'm doing this on the fly. They referenced this a little bit in the HBO series Band of Brothers. But the German troops, there were many different, very, very elite German units. Speaking of World War II, in World War II, there were many elite German units. And some of the most elite units would walk around with a flower. They had a flower. Is Edelweiss a flower? I want to say it was an Edelweiss flower. That may be wrong. I'm almost positive that's what it is, though. Either way, you had these super tough troops, and they're in these, you know, German army uniforms, and they would have a flower stuck in their uniform. Well, what was that flower? There was some mountain somewhere that you had to crest or you had to get above a certain level as part of your military training. And if you achieved that, that was like a mark, a serious mark of admiration. Guys would see that and be like, oh, crap. Holy crap. This is one of those guys that got the flower. It was Edelweiss. Yeah, I was right. It is Edelweiss. Anyway, mountains. the guys who've been through the mountain trials, the mountain tribulations. There are amazing stories, and I mean really, really incredible stuff. The fighting in Italy was so much mountain fighting, and of course the Italians couldn't defend anything, so the Germans had to take it all over. And there are stories, because you're fighting on cliffs, of guys, they're attaching explosives to string, and they're fighting vertically, straight up or straight down, and they're essentially dropping explosives on strings and swinging them back and forth until they try to swing it into the cave opening. And we're talking mountain fighting like that. It's wild. It's crazy, right? Mountain fighting, man. No thanks. And then you combine mountain fighting with jungle fighting. No, I'm too old and fat. I would just die. I would just fall over and die. My back hurts just thinking about it. My back doesn't hurt because I take Relief Factor, but your back probably hurts because you don't. Or maybe you're still trashing your kidneys every time you get pain. Leg pain, back pain, neck pain, muscle pain. Pains, aches and pains come with life, but you don't have to live with it. You don't have to gut it out. You don't have to just grin and bear it. You don't have to have a bad night's sleep. You don't have to snap at your wife or your husband. Call Relief Factor. Natural. Drug-free. And this is how it works. You take it every day. And what happens is, as it builds up in your body's natural response to inflammation improves. So the next time your joints want to start bothering you, your body is so fortified with natural things, the pain goes away. Call 1-800-4-RELIEF. 1-800-4-RELIEF, or go to relieffactor.com. All right? All right. Somebody has a, speaking of all this warfare stuff, someone has a heart for veterans and what they're going through and suicide and depression and things like that. And let's have a talk about that. Maybe it'll help somebody. Maybe it won't. Next.
Fighting for your freedom every day.
USA! USA!
The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday. Churning through everything here on the show. I do have to get to this one before we get to the veteran thing. So someone sends this email in, Shogun Oracle. My wife and I became members of Shadow Mountain Church. In case you don't know, that's in San Diego. Below is a link to their broadcast. Sorry to ask Michael to do some work, so on and so forth. Whether you are personally making any difference or everyone is slowly waking up, you and the other good people of the world are waking up. And the guy's name is Dr. Jeremiah. I think it's Dr. David Jeremiah. Yeah, Dr. David Jeremiah is this guy's name. So this bastard gets up, and I got to tell you, they went and pulled the guys went and pulled the audio because he sent a link over. I like this dude. I'll tell you, if I lived in San Diego, I know what church I'd be going to. This sounds like a man after my own heart.
What a tremendous option we have as parents to make a difference in the lives of our children. And if we're honest, we know that much of that difference is made in those early years. Many of the principles that we live by for all of our lives are ingrained into us when we're very small. So don't ever throw those years away. Don't ever say, I'll wait until they're older. If you do that, you will have waited too long. I'm going to tell you something that's become very apparent to me, and it might not make some of you happy when I say this, but I really don't care. I'm going to say it because it's important. If you train up your children for 12 grades and send them to a private or secular school, you will regret it. You will be sorry you ever did it. I don't know one school that has not been taken over by the crazies and the communists and all the rest of the people that are filling their heads with all this junk and causing them to do what we're watching on television. I can't imagine someone you love, you train them for 12 years or 12 grades, and then you say, okay, why don't you go to Harvard? Harvard's a good school. It used to be, not anymore. It's full of woke people who just want to destroy your children, and that will be the cause that happens. If I didn't want to embarrass some people, I could tell you the stories. There are people in this church who I love who've gone through that process, enamored with the intelligentsia that's a part of the big schools with the big names, not realizing that when they send their child there, they're playing Russian roulette with their soul. There are other schools to go to. There are Christian schools. There are schools where this craziness doesn't happen. I'll tell you what, if my children were at the age and getting ready to go to college, I'd never send them to Harvard or Yale or Penn.
I love this guy. Might want to take those words to heart. Do you love Aiden, Jaden, and Braden? And I'm glad you do. Love them enough to not send them to be educated by your mortal enemies. This is not 1960. Colleges are not liberal. They're kind of left-leaning. They are openly hostile, many of them, to you, to your babies, to your belief system, to everything. Do you take your kids to the zoo and chuck them in the gorilla enclosure? I don't. So don't send them to Harvard. Oh, great crayon-eating oracle. I literally, why do you guys have to do that? Met my hero today. When people say the heroes of the past wars don't exist, I just want to say they still exist. I met and talked to Marcus Luttrell, a.k.a. the Lone Survivor. He was talking about veteran suicide. My mentality has completely changed after hearing him talk. Thankfully, it's a commercial, so hopefully all of America can hear what he has to say. But my question is, how do you recommend helping veterans? Have you thought about bringing some veterans on and letting them talk about the transition to civilian life to help us non-military understand? We might all need some chalk to get through this. You're welcome for the transition. No, I'm not going to tell you about chalk right now, but look, first, I'm not going to speak for all veterans. I'm not some veteran's voice out there where I encompass every veteran and how they all feel. I can simply tell you about me, how I felt, how I feel, and how many of the guys I served with, how they felt and feel, depending on whether they're still alive or not. First and foremost, when you sign up to join the military as a young man, you do so oftentimes, yes, you want to serve your country, you want to better yourself. Both those things were true of me. Also, this was true of me. I wanted some adventure. I wanted adventure. Young men, much to their mother's chagrin, young men crave a little bit of danger. They do. They do. It's how God made us. It's why they always march off to war. Who marches off to war? It's the young men. It's their thing. It's our thing. It's what we do. Well, I shouldn't say our. I'm not a young man anymore. Anyway, but it's what we do. And what happens is you join the military. I'll just make it about the Marines. And they're going to grow you up fast. And you're going to find yourself very quickly, at least I can only speak from my experience in the Marine Corps, you are going to find yourself quickly, within a year or two, unless you're a turd or something, you're going to be in a leadership position, a revered leadership position, where men under you must follow your orders to the letter, and they will. You are trusted with things, weapons, equipment, ammunition. You are given incredible responsibilities over things. You are, and I hate putting it this way, but I am. I'm just going to tell you, you're important. And you feel important. You feel significant. You matter, and you do. I was 22 years old, and I was in charge of 10 men in combat. I was our mortar section leader by the time we left Iraq. It was my section. I was a section leader. 10 men, life or death, mine. We're going out on a patrol at night. Me, another NCO, you're leading the patrol. We're in charge at 22. And then I'll tell you the other half of the story. Before I tell you that, let me do this really quickly here. Let me tell you about what's happening with our money. It's not only bad, it's getting worse. And we keep previewing things about inflation and interest rates. And have you noticed something? That they keep saying things like, well, next year the interest on the debt's going to cost more than the military. And now because everything keeps going the wrong way, they're saying, well, never mind, that's going to actually be this year too. Things are not going the right direction monetarily. So we have to do things to protect ourselves. Getting some precious metals in your hands and in your retirement is a basic way to do that. not going crazy, doing some basics. Just do some basics, the little things. Oxford Gold Group will do these things for you. They will mail it to your front door. It's anonymous. It's insured. You don't need a bank vault. We're just talking little coins here. They'll get it in your retirement account, and they'll make it easy. 833-995-GOLD. Let's talk about this veteran stuff. Hang on.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
The word on the street then was, he's too country for pop. But then once I got to country, it was, he's too pop for country. So I kind of never really had a place to fit in, but that's exactly how and why I fit. I just embraced that. Like, yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The best way to understand all sides of an issue is to know all sides of an issue.
Can't get that in the mainstream media, which is why you've got to listen to some Clay and Buck for another point of view.
Buck, why are you going third person?
Because, Clay, I think this ad is running in places that might not exactly align with all of our politics or even know who we are.
It's impossible. But maybe if it's true, I bet if they did listen, they'd end up agreeing with us on at least one issue, even if they secretly won't admit it.
Well, the only way they're going to find out is if they download the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever they get their pods.
We're easy to find, unlike your wife at Costco.
Clay, you speak the truth, but we're already losing people.
I think I gained one or two just now.
In case you haven't noticed, we like to have a lot of fun as well as talk about what's going on in the world.
Come hang with us today and every day at Clay and Buck. Download the iHeartRadio app, search out those names, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, and come hang.
In the fall of 1986, Ronald Reagan found himself at the center of a massive scandal that looked like it might bring down his presidency.
Did you make a mistake in sending arms to Tehran, sir?
No.
It became known as the Iran-Contra affair.
And I'm not taking any more questions. In just a second, I'm going to ask Attorney General.
I'm Leon Neyfakh, co-creator of Slow Burn. In my podcast, Fiasco, Iran-Contra, you'll hear all the unbelievable details of a scandal that captivated the nation nearly 40 years ago, but which few of us still remember today.
The things that happened were so bizarre and insane, I can't begin to tell you.
Please do.
To hear the whole story, listen to Fiasco, Iran-Contra on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, reminding you, you can email the show and you should, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So before we get back to the politics, someone wants to talk about spending and this Biden-Trump debate and many other things. Before we get to that, we're talking a little bit about veterans and veteran suicide and things like that. And I was just kind of going over how it feels. Okay, so you're young, you sign up, you go fight. Because the guys who are struggling with depression and suicide are the guys who went over and fought. You go over and you fight. And you're important. I really want to stress that you're important. You remember, you ever see that movie First Blood, the first Rambo? Everyone thinks it's called Rambo, but it's called First Blood. You ever see First Blood? Most people have seen First Blood. If you haven't, he's this Green Beret who comes back from Vietnam and gets harassed, whatever. It's a great movie. Highly recommend it. But at the end, when his buddy's trying to get him to turn himself in, he starts screaming about, I mattered. I was important. I was in charge of $1 million equipment. And now I can't even find a job parking cars. For some of the guys I serve with, it wasn't just the explosions and the blood or whatever. It was you come back from that. Remember, I told you I was a mortar section leader, and I wasn't a good one. Okay, I'm not bragging, believe me, but I was in charge of the section. 10 men under my command. They're under my charge in Afghanistan. At 22, I am a leader. When the leader of our company He wants something done, calls in the NCOs. I'm one of them. I'm standing there in a small circle. You do this, this, and this. You're important. 22. You come back. You get out. You're not the same. Now, I would argue that you probably have prioritized the wrong things, but it's you think about this. I want you to think about this. And what I'm about to say is no insult to blue-collar workers or whatever, but I went and did construction when I got back. Okay, so I was 22. 15 minutes ago, I was 22 years old, leading men on night patrols in Baghdad. At one point in time, we were on a night patrol with Green Berets in the night in Baghdad with MBGs on. 15 minutes later, I'm not only on a construction crew, I'm pretty much the low man on the construction crew. And if somebody needs the trash picked up, Kelly, pick up the trash. That's hard. I cannot speak for women. I will not speak for a woman. For men, we have this picture in our minds. I certainly did. I do. I'm no different. Not separating myself from this. Where throughout life, our rank in society or place in society, I don't know how I want to put that. We just assume it's going to slowly and steadily go up. Yeah, you'll have this entry-level job, but then you'll keep your nose to the grindstone and you'll work your way up and soon you'll be in management. Maybe one day you'll start your own business. Hey, look at that. I'm 50 years old. I bought a Mercedes. Hey, I'm 55. I fly first class. Oh, we have a beach house now at 60. Oh, I retire one day and my wife and I are very comfortable down in Boca Raton. You just have this picture in your head that you're slowly and surely in your life. If it was one of those charts, it would just slowly but surely be heading up, 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 up. But you go to combat, all this responsibility, all this adventure, and you come back, and it doesn't feel like you went up. It feels like now all of it was for naught, and you're not really anybody anymore. That hurts. I will tell you, it affected me. It did. It bothered me a lot. The noises bothered me a lot. To this day, I actually do not do that great with loud noises. I'm fine. I'm not gonna hide under the desk and cry if a balloon pops. But I will tell you, if Chris and Michael were to actually do something nice for me for once for my birthday or something and blow up a bunch of balloons and put them in the studio and then they started popping the balloons, I wouldn't cry or scream or yell, but I would find an excuse to leave. I'd be, hey guys, I gotta run to the store. You need anything? I would not do well with that. I wouldn't do well with it. I still prefer the dark over sitting in the light. I just, if I'm alone at home, there are no lights on ever. I like it in the dark. I don't know why. I don't know what's wrong with me. And I am not putting myself in the shoes of other guys who, I never had to hold my best friend and watch him die. When you're a young man and you go through all that, you can get yourself so twisted up and lost and messed up. And then what else you do, and I did this too, is you turn to drugs or alcohol. I didn't do the drugs, but booze. It's just drinking all the time. It's drinking and drinking and drinking. And then it came back to me later on in life after I've shaken it. Drinking, drinking, drinking. Finally ended up conquering those demons by the grace of God and only by the grace of God. But that makes it worse. So they go through all these things. And what it really comes down to, what a lot of it comes down to, is guys will convince themselves, men will convince themselves that awesome, admirable thing they did, that it's the last great thing they'll ever do. They're all of a sudden, they were 22 and important. Now they're 25 and they're a garbage man. Not that there's a daggone thing in the world wrong with being a garbage man, but you're a garbage man or you're on a construction crew like I was, or you're bagging groceries or whatever you're doing, and you feel like, well, crap, man. My friends are dead. I'm all messed up. I drink too much. I just did the last great thing I'm ever going to do. Hey, I'm checking out. That is why when I talk to veterans, I practically scream this from the rooftop, and if you're one of those guys listening right now, and I'm sure there are more than one, listen to me. You did do something incredible. You did. And you should be proud of it. And on the resume of your life, believe me, that's going to stand out to people. Your kids one day will admire it. To this day, my old dress blues in the Marines, they hang up high in my closet. I don't put them on, but my boys will look at them. My boys will touch. I mean, that's dad. Whoa, look at that. Ribbons and stuff. I mean, that's, for them, it's cool. But it is not the last good thing you have to do in this life. It's a thing. Good. You did a great thing. You put it on your resume. God's not done with you yet. I promise you, cross my heart and hope to die. When your time is up, your time is up. No need to rush it. There was a show, I'm going to move on to other things. This can get a little heavy, so move on and talk about politics and spending and debates and things like that. But there was a show I never watched in its completion. I've had people ask me, have you watched it? But it was called Generation Kill. I believe it was on HBO, but Generation Kill. It was about our generation and the fighting and everything. And there was one young man who, by all accounts, he just looked like a wonderful young Marine. And just looked like a solid dude. And they're interviewing him one night, and he's sitting there, and there's explosions going on around him. And he's talking about how he's just ready to be out. He's ready to be done. Can't wait to get back home like any other young man. Hey, I want to get back home and see my woman and eat a hot meal. And I want to, and then something blows up behind him. And he's like, I'm tired of that too. And I remember watching it, and I remember thinking, man, I really hope that guy makes it back. I hope he makes it. I hope he makes it back, and I hope he has a wife one day, and 10 kids running around, and you know, bills stacking up, of course, and stresses of life, but I hope, you know, he's there, he's doing it, he's awesome, he's brave, he's a good dude, I hope he makes it. He OD'd about 2 months after, or 2 years, 2 or 3 years after that little footage was shot. He overdosed. He's gone now. Gentlemen, don't check out on us, all right? And as let me just say this, as I've said many times, there are a million suicide hotlines you can call. If you are somebody and you are in need, or you are the wife of somebody in need, there are probably wives listening right now whose husbands may be going through this. If there's a problem, you reach out to me. You understand? Send me an email to the show. I'm not saying we can work miracles, but I do know some people. Okay? Jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Just send one email before you do something stupid, all right? Believe me, we don't delete those, all right? All right, enough of that. Let's talk about politics. You ready to talk about politics now? We have debates. Are they going to dump Biden? What do we have to cut out of the federal government? All kinds of things still to come. Homeschooling and more. Next.
Miss something?
There's a podcast.
Get it on demand wherever podcasts are found. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Friday and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. And before we get into this deficit debt situation email that I'm about to read here, I think it's been far too long since we've heard from the Frito Bandito.
Ay, 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 ay. I am the Frito Bandito. Hey, I like Fritos corn chips. I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips. I'll get them from you. Ay, 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 ay. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos corn chips and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend. Munch, munch, munch a bunch of Fritos.
Dear Oracle of Oratory Opulence, I would fully support your dictatorship in cutting almost all the federal government, but realistically, how much of the government and its spending would you have to cut in order to start making a dent in our national deficit and start running in the black again? Do you know or know someone, it's an economist, so on and so forth, his name is Tony. And we can dig into this more if it's something that we really want to get into the details of. We can have on more budget experts, but let's think of it this way, okay? So we're running now regularly over $1 trillion deficits. Now remember, deficit and debt are different things. Just for all the kids out there, a deficit, that's how much yearly you spend more than you take in. So if I take in $3 trillion, I spend $4 trillion, we have a $1 trillion deficit that year. The debt is different. The debt is all of the deficits we've ever accumulated, all of our debt, all lumped into one. Deficit is your yearly overspending. Debt is your lifetime overspending, okay? So here's why our situation is so brutal and so scary, to be honest with you. It's not only that we spend far more than we take in now. It's that the government, because politicians never want to have to make hard choices, that's the last thing a politician wants to do. A politician never wants to go to the voters and say, sorry, I've got to cut you off from this. I've got to take away this that you're used to. Politicians love to give away things. Right, vote for me, I'll give you this. Vote for me, I'll give you that. Because of that, over the years, what they've done is, have you ever heard the terms discretionary spending or non-discretionary spending? Let me just go ahead and simplify this for everybody. What they've done is they've made most of our spending mandatory. Mandatory, meaning no matter what Congress does, it goes through. Period. End of story. They've done that with the gigantic popular entitlements that everyone loves. I'm done wasting my breath on it. I'm just going to wait till they go bankrupt, and then I'll come on here on the radio very obnoxiously and tell everyone I told you so. I've accepted the left and the right. They love Medicare and Social Security. They believe they'll be there forever. You're going to get a whole bunch of I earned it stuff, and then it's going to collapse the United States of America, and I'll just sit there and shrug my shoulders and say I told you so. So I'm not wasting my breath on that again. But that's one great example. If a politician, any politician, even hints that we have to adjust these programs before they end America, that politician will probably lose his seat in office. The reason I'm sitting here today talking to you on the Jesse Kelly Show and I'm not a member of Congress is Social Security. I went on camera and I said it is the largest Ponzi scheme in human history, which it obviously is by any definition, and we have to take steps to phase it out and privatize it. That's what I said. That is the reason I lost in a Tea Party year by 4,000 votes. I can't tell you how many Republican old people came up to me and told me they voted for my Democrat opponent because of the commercials she ran on Social Security. Any politician who speaks about those issues in an honest way will lose their seat in Congress. Monday, when I show up, what, Chris? Oh, you have it? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Is Jesse Kelly listening to you? Was Jesse Kelly listening to you when he said on Social Security, I'd love to eliminate the program? Jesse Kelly said he would work to eliminate Medicare over time. Was he listening to you then? How about when Jesse Kelly said at the same time, he'd cut taxes in half for millionaires? Is Jesse Kelly listening to you? Just listen to Jesse Kelly.
We didn't make that up. Chris pulled that. It's still available on YouTube. That was an ad on the television set. When you sat down when I was running for Congress in Arizona, people would watch that. Cost me my race. I'm not mad about it. I'd much rather be here. But because the voters love those programs and it's going to end the country, the politicians know that. So what they've done is they've taken, and it's not just those programs, it's other things, and they make it mandatory. So they can then go to the voters and say, I can't do anything about it. All this is mandatory. We have realized this. The money we spend, over 80% of it, over 80% of it is mandatory. It would be like, oh, let me explain. Let's say I made $100,000 a year and we were spending $200,000 a year. Oh, my gosh, we're going to go broke, right? Uh-oh, problems in the Kelly household. I'm making $100,000, I'm spending $200,000. But through some weird thing, I've written into law that it's a requirement that I spend $170,000. So can I ever save myself if no matter what, it's written into law that I spend far more than I'll ever take in? It's not they've made it a situation where it's not legally possible to save the financial system. This is why I tell you all the time. I don't know how you write the debt ship. I just don't. There's no appetite for it in the country, and there won't be until the Social Security checks stop coming, and they will. Until Medicare stops being accepted, and it will. Until we have collapse of these systems, and they will collapse because no one wants to reform them. No one wants to adjust them. Everyone wants to just promise handouts. So, to answer your question, we would have to cut spending in half at least to eliminate the deficit in this country, to truly eliminate the deficit. Now, you can do that any way you want. Go look at a pie chart of the government. cut this, cut that, little here, little there. Ideally, you do this stuff in phases so you're not destroying people, but you want to stop running a deficit? That's what it would take. All right. Let's talk about Joe Biden getting bounced at the convention, homeschooling, and so much more. But first, let's talk about MyPillow. Like, as long as there's going to be a debt bomb that drops on us, at least our feet can be comfortable because of MyPillow sandals. Have you ever heard? Everyone's heard of MyPillow pillows. I'm just going to set those aside right now. MyPillow sandals. Have you seen these things? Have you ever talked to somebody who owns a pair? They're indoor, outdoor, and they have, it's not just some cheap $5 sandal you buy at the local big box store. Of course, they over-engineered and overbuilt the thing. I'll wear them around all day. If I'm working out back or something like that, it's MyPillow sandals all day. My feet don't hurt. My knees don't hurt at the end of the day. These things are amazing. They're $25 right now. MyPillow has a $25 extravaganza sale right now. Go get yourself some MyPillow sandals. They have a bunch of stuff for $25 right now, and that's not going to last forever, so you might want to press the gas pedal on it. MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special square, and use the promo code Jesse. MyPillow.com, promo code Jesse. We'll be back.
Hi, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia.
On this week's episode of Math and Magic, I'm sitting down with the one and only Bobby Bones. We're exploring the power of audio.
Yeah, I don't fit into one specific hole. I think that is what endeared me to listeners. That's why I'm here now, because I talk to people that grew up like me, have sensibilities like me, and have loyalties like me.
Listen to Math and Magic, stories from the frontiers of marketing on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
You're listening to an iHeart Podcast.